Coming to you from the Golden One Center, getting ready for the knockout round here, the Kings and the Pelicans. We got a sea of blue at the Golden One because it looks like, Kyle Draper, we got T-shirts for everybody tonight.
Yeah, excited about that, the blue T-shirts on the every seat in here, in-season tournament quarterfinals, sort of a must-win, a big game, if you will. I'm all for the Kings learning as they go. Like, I think this is a huge game for them just to learn what it's like playing in a big game, and I think this will help you out in the playoffs.
Speaking of big games, yesterday in Philadelphia, the 49ers all over Kyle Draper's Eagles, 42-19. That's why Kyle is wearing the Brock Purdy jersey today. He said, oh, 49ers win, I'll wear a Brock Purdy jersey. Joining us with more on the game and what the game means to the MVP race in the NFL, senior writer, NFL.com, NFL Networks, Jeffrey Chedia with us. How are you today, Jeffrey?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine, and we appreciate your time very much. You know, it's an emotional day both ways here on the show. Kyle, being from Philadelphia, we've had a few callers poking fun at him today, but how did the 49ers win impact the MVP race as you see it, Jeff?
Well, it certainly boosted Brock Purdy into the conversation. He probably should have been there a long time ago and kind of made Jalen Hurts go down a step. But you watched that game yesterday and you realize the best team in the NFL is in San Francisco, and usually you get the best team in the NFL and the quarterback's playing at a high level, that puts Brock Purdy front and center. And I realize he's got a great team, and I fully acknowledge I was late to the party on this last season, but I think a lot of people look at him like he's still Mr. Irrelevant, seventh round pick, lucky to be playing in the league and leading a team that is really loaded, and he's still got a loaded team, but he's very much a playmaker. And you look at his numbers against a team like the Eagles, like the Jaguars, like the Cowboys, 10 touchdowns, no picks in those games. That gets my vote.
Jeff Chedia, thanks so much for joining us. You know, when you look at the numbers, you know, Brock Purdy, everything screams out MVP candidate. When I look at yesterday's game, you know, being an Eagles guy that I am, an Eagles fan, I look at that secondary. Is that going to be the issue that comes back to bite them when it matters the most? Or is there anything they can do here in this last month of the season to improve that secondary?
Well, they've been concerned about that all season long. And you're right, they've been able to overcome that because Hurts is such a good player. They're such a clutch team. They're well coached. And they find ways to win. But you look at last week against Buffalo, gave up over 500 yards of offense. Josh Allen had 40 yards of that on his own. They give up 42 to San Francisco. They know the secondary's been a big issue. And they've talked about, I know people over there who I saw earlier in this year, they talked about losing Avante Maddox to injury. They talked about C.J. Gardner-Johnson going to Detroit free agency. Just those losses were huge for that team. And they play such a very simple way of defense. They don't try to disguise a lot of stuff, and they try to just beat you with talent. But when they're not winning up front, and it's hard to do against the 49ers when you play that way, it's hard for them to cover up some of those issues on the back end. So, yeah, it's definitely a big issue for them moving forward.
Jeffrey Chedia with us from NFL.com and NFL Network. You wrote something really interesting today, Jeffrey. I'm wondering if you could explain to us here, why do you think this year's MVP choice comes down to big moments more than statistics?
Well, because you look at one, you're not getting a number of big games. This definitely has become more of a defense first league this season for whatever reason. Part of that is, you know, Tom Brady's gone, Ben Roethlisberger's gone, Drew Brees gone. You don't have the veteran quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers has been hurt, Kirk Cousins has been hurt. Those guys have names and not playing. So you got a lot of mediocre quarterback play, and you also have a lot of teams that are in contention. And so when you have that, it's the Heisman Trophy, where you have these big schools playing at each other, Michigan versus Ohio State or Georgia versus Alabama, where you have a chance to watch these guys go head-to-head and see who really stands out. And so Brock Purdy's had those opportunities now against the Cowboys, you know, against the Eagles. Dak Prescott's going to get those opportunities, you know, against Buffalo, against Philadelphia, against San Francisco, and on down the line. So you have all these players who are also trying to prove themselves as stars now. You know, since you look on that list, there's a lot of players there who people have doubted or we don't know that much about, but they're all starting to take star turns because the opportunity is there for them.
Jeff Chedia joining us here on the Drive Guys Sacktown Sports 1140. Jeff, you were talking MVP, and, you know, I could argue, you know, first five, six, seven, 8 weeks of the season, the MVP of the Niners was Christian McCaffrey. Where does he fit into this conversation?
Well, unfortunately, he's in that boat with the Tyreek Hills and the Myles Garrett of the world, where you can only have so many guys getting that kind of love. And he's definitely had his moments and had his big games. But when you're not a quarterback, you really have to have a number of splash plays. You got to be doing it every week. And so if you don't do it as a running back every week, and if he's had a good season, over 1,000 yards, he's an all-pro, Pro Bowl type player. But if you're not doing it every week, people tend to forget about you. And that's really – he's going to be in the conversation for offensive player of the year, but I figure Tyreek Hill's probably going to run away with that the way things are going for him. But he certainly had a great year. And you look at what's around him as well, he also suffers from that in the same way Brock Purdy does. Because when you got George Kittle, you got Ayuk, you got Debo, all those guys, people see the highlights, and every week they see a different player doing something great. It draws attention away from a guy like McCaffrey.
Jeff, I wanted to circle back to something you touched on in one of your first responses here. Are there just, when it comes to Brock Purdy and his candidacy, are there just too many people who refuse to see him as an MVP-type player for him to actually have a legitimate shot at winning this award?
I think that's going to be what people hold against him. And now he's got a great opportunity to shake that, because now people fully see them as the best team in the league based on what happened last week. But there's also recency bias here. And so the more we get away from that game, the more he's going to have a 300-yard, 4-touchdown game to keep it going. But, yeah, I do believe that there is, and not throughout the league, but who I've talked to, from personnel people to fans to whoever, other radio shows, there's always, well, he's the guy who's basically playing point guard over there. He's the guy who's passing the ball to Kittle and Debo and Ayuk and handing off to McCaffrey. How could you not put up big numbers? And the argument I had to that is, well, tell me a quarterback who's playing well who ends up more who doesn't have great players around him. You know, I live in Kansas City, and Patrick Mahomes had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I look at what Jalen Hurts has in Philadelphia. They loaded that offense for him with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and DeAndre Swift. So it's like, if you're going to play well at that level and be in that conversation, you probably got a lot of talent around you anyway.
Jeff Chedia joining us. Jeff, when you look at, you know, what the Niners have been able to do, it's sort of their season has been broken up into the thirds. They had this hot start, 5-0, and then they lose 3 in a row. Now they've won 4 in a row. What do you think has changed, I guess, since that 3-game losing streak? What's been the biggest part of improvement for this team?
Health. they got Trent Williams got healthy. Debo got healthy. McCaffrey, I know, had that oblique, I think it was, injury. He's gotten healthier. You know, you can talk about Steve Wilks and the defense and some of the moves they made over there, trading for a couple of those defensive ends, and Steve Wilks going to the sideline from the box. But ultimately, they're just a really talented team. And no matter how good you are in this league, you're going to go through rough patches. But the really good teams, the ones that are well-coached, are going to find a way to push through that and find their way. You're seeing Detroit go through some of that now. The Chiefs have been going through it. I live here in Kansas City for the bulk of this season. You've seen it in Buffalo. You've seen it in Miami. Like, none of these teams are, you know, we want to act like this is like the 1970 Steelers or the 1980s 49ers, where these teams are loaded from top to bottom. End of the day, they're all going to have their moments where they get exposed. But, you know, if you had one more thing I would say about that, I think that 3-game losing streak probably gave them a lot more focus, made them realize that we're not just going to get back to the championship game because we want to. We're going to have to go back and earn it. So I see that as well in the way they play with their hunger.
Yeah, Jeffrey Chedia, nice enough to join us here with the Drive guys. You mentioned the Chiefs, and I understand your point. You know, there's just so much more parity in the NFL this year than there even has been in recent years, and there's been more parity in recent years than there used to be. But my question is, I was stunned by what happened to the Chiefs last night. Should I have been?
No, not if you've seen them all season long.
Yeah.
The fan base here is really thoroughly frustrated by what they've been seeing, especially offensively, because they've grown accustomed to the quarterback throwing for almost 5,000 yards, 40 touchdowns, the offense scoring 30, 40 points a game. And they've come back to earth this year. And the receivers are a big part of the story. They're not on the same page with the quarterback. Most games, they're not catching the ball consistently. But, you know, the offensive line has been an issue. this entire year. Their offensive tackles haven't played great. They've had turnover problems and penalties in other areas. And this is what happens sometimes when you have a team that is you win a championship with a lot of young guys as they did last year, and then you come back. Some of these young guys, they don't understand that, okay, now it's even harder to do it. And I feel like a lot of teams are really taking it to them and really coming after them, and they're really on their heels a lot. They're playing really good defensively, but sometimes when they play, it seems like they just expect to win because of the Chiefs. And I liken it to Mike Tyson back in the day before he got into the ring with Buster Douglas. And when he watched the ring before that, people were scared before the fight even started, probably had lost before the fight started. Now they know they can knock them out. It's a different fight now.
Hey, Jeff, final question for me. When you look at the NFC, you got the Niners, you got the Eagles. How serious should we take the Cowboys and the Lions as threats to make it to the Super Bowl?
I think they're both legitimate threats. And I know Detroit is not looked great the last couple of weeks, but they're well coached. They're very physical. The way they're built on the offensive defensive line, it's very similar to the way the Niners are built. Like, they're going to be able to get after you, and that kind of style is going to help you win games in the playoffs. And Dallas, too, has always been talented. It's just a matter of, is Dak Prescott going to make the plays? And are they going to be able to avoid the mistakes in the big games they've had against San Francisco? And so, you know, I always find nobody lives in a vacuum forever. Like, you either grow or you get worse. And so I think when teams look at those kind of teams who have young talent, who are well coached, who've been hungry, yeah, they're dangerous because they want to win as bad as anybody else.
Hey, if you're a 49er fan, don't miss what Jeffrey Chedia had to say today at NFL.com about Brock Purdy and what yesterday meant for his MVP candidacy. Jeffrey Chedia, we appreciate your time very much. Thanks, Jeff. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right. Now, yeah, we're going to take a quick timeout. By the way, did you see I don't know how much you saw the game last night. Just another one of those blatant pass interferences at the end of the game that
God.
Officials
yes.
decided, play on.
Yeah, play on, right? Swallow the whistle, right?
Seen a lot of that this year.
That was terrible. Yeah.
All right, when we come back, the one thing the 49ers cannot forget, even after yesterday, and more on what's going on out here at the Golden One Center where the Kings get ready for a knockout round game against the Pelicans. It's Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Weddy Gleason and Kyle Draper, great to be back with you, Kyle. I know we're having fun today.
Been a while.
Great to be
Been
back
a while.
Here. Yeah. Appreciate the fact that we're back here for the knockout round, and we've got T-shirts on the seats tonight.
Yeah.
And I happened to post a picture to Twitter. You know, there are some Kings fans that just they're not yet entirely comfortable with blue. We have the blue uniforms tonight, of course, for the in-season tournament. You know, some fans are just...
Where's the purple at, right?
Yeah.
Where's our purple? But, you know, they're celebrating 100 years
right.
of Kings royalty, and so I get it. You know, the original colors were blue, and so it's not Sacramento Kings colors, but, you know, we're embracing our heritage
right
here now.
Today. Yeah, and it's... The tournament, I know we'll talk more about it, but I was skeptical of the tournament when it was first announced. I remember a couple of years ago when we first found out the NBA wanted to have a play-in tournament at the end of the year. Like, in-season tournament, that'll never work. And I know it's too early to draw any conclusions, but so far, and then it's not just here in Sacramento. So far, this thing is working.
Oh, yeah. It's been amazing so far, and I think it's going to be here to stay. Sure, I think they'll make some tweaks. You know, I was saying last week, I would like the games to be sort of all within like a two-week span so that you don't have a situation like last week, you beat the Warriors, you're high and excited, then the next night you got to play a regular season sort of, you know, 1-of-82 game against the Clippers. I would like, you know, let's make it a real format, a two-week tournament, and go from like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I do think the Kings are potentially catching a big break tonight. Because for the Pelicans, if I'm not mistaken, this will be their third game in four nights.
Yes, coming off third game in four nights. No games last night for in the NBA at all. Everybody had off. But, no, you're right about it. And this Pelicans team, obviously, they've given the Kings some fits. And C.J. McCollum's back.
Mm-hmm.
So, third game in four nights. But they're a young team, too. You know, Zion's still young. Ingram's not old. You know, CJ isn't old. And so I expect we'll see the best of the Pelicans tonight. This is, you know, a lot of times, Whitey, I'll say a must feel good game, and this is a must win game. You got to beat these guys. They beat you twice already. It's in season tournament on your home court. A chance to go to Vegas. You know, when you talk to the players and coaches behind the scenes, they're all like, we want to go to Vegas. We want to go to – so now's your time. Mm-hmm. Handle your business tonight. And you got a game Thursday in Vegas.
You know, we have that phrase, oh, it's got kind of a playoff atmosphere tonight. We're going to need a new term because this isn't really a playoff atmosphere. It's a new in-season tournament atmosphere. Right. And it's a cool thing, but it's just – it's a little different and unique.
Yeah, it is different. And, you know but you could just feel the buzz, I think, around
the
arena.
Oh, it's real.
It's real, though, right?
It's not manufactured.
Yeah, it's not manufactured. And, you know, I even like, you know, just the whole signage out here, which what we see up there on the Jumbotron. Like, it feels bigger than just a regular game in December.
And that was the whole idea, or one of the big ideas behind this concept of the in-season tournament is making these games in November and December a little more juicy, and it's working.
And it has
for
worked.
For the players, too.
Yeah, it has worked. And, you know, if we were playing the Pelicans and this wasn't an in-season tournament game, it'd be a big game, you know, because we're all excited to see Zion. But the fact that, you know, there's so much more on the line here, in the NBA, I will say they've done a great job of structuring the games on non-NFL nights, too. That was a big part of their scheduling. And so, no, it's been great so far.
Yeah, and tonight, this is a TNT game, right?
Yeah, TNT game.
And the football game is Jacksonville and Cincinnati.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Getting back to the 49ers.
And we have to?
Yeah. Right. I don't think you're going to mind this part of it. I think you made this point earlier. The one thing that the 49ers can't forget even after yesterday is that they haven't won anything yet. That's a huge win, and they backed up all the talk, but they haven't won a dang thing yet. They haven't won a Super Bowl under Kyle Shanahan. They didn't really win anything yesterday. They needed that win. Now they're in great shape to end up with a top seed. They still are on the outside looking in, but they got the tiebreaker. But they still haven't done anything yet, and that's what I appreciated about Brock Purdy and what he had to say yesterday. He said, that's where I was at with this game. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get distracted by, I've got to go back and show everybody what could have happened or what could have been, because he said, we have really important games coming up.
Yeah, they got huge games starting, you know, this week with Seattle, the Seahawks. I actually might keep this Purdy jersey. I got tickets to the game on Sunday. Maybe I'll wear it to the game, try to blend in, not stand out there at Levi's Stadium. But, no, when you look at it, I don't know about you, but it feels to me like after this game yesterday, I'm ready to fast-track to the playoffs, right?
Yeah, like, let's go.
You know, and we still got five more weeks of games, and I'm like, you know, it'll all shake out, and we'll see who gets what seed. But I'm ready to line them back up. Let's get right to the playoffs.
I want to thank you because when we talked to Jeffrey Chedia and you talked about other teams in the NFC that could be a top seed, you mentioned Dallas and Detroit, and you didn't mention Seattle. Thank you. I appreciate
that. No, Seattle's reeling right now, man. They're being exposed. You know, one week it's the offense. The next week it's the defense. And so with that being said, this is a big game for the Niners coming up this week. Not necessarily for the division title or anything like that, but you're coming off an emotional high.
Right, potential trap game.
Yeah, potential trap game. Sort of like, you know, what it was, you know, Dallas earlier this season. You know, you come off that high, you beat Dallas, and so now's your chance, you know, against the team you should beat. You're at home. You just whooped up on them a couple weeks ago. And so, you know, you got to come out if you're the Niners and with that same mentality, that same focus like we saw against Philadelphia.
Yeah, and that gets back again to yesterday. As great as that win was, you can't afford any missteps because the Eagles, you know, you still need them to lose one more. Maybe you get lucky they lose a couple. Right. Maybe they don't. And if you, you know, come up short against a team like Seattle, you kick one,
you give it
away
back
again.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you undo a lot of what you accomplished yesterday.
Yeah, and that would be, you know, yes, could you go into Philly and win? You just did it. But the odds of it happening is sure it becomes a longer shot for you.
Right.
And so when I look at the Niners, I can't see any NFC team going into Levi's and winning. You know, even my Eagles, as presently constructed, Eagles got to get a whole lot better, especially defensively. But if the Niners get home field throughout, in my opinion, you could mark them into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. Jeffrey Chedia pointed this out. when it comes to the 49ers, you would think the one biggest worry here is can everybody stay healthy?
Yeah.
And I know that's true. It's football, of course. That's true of every team. But it's been especially true of the 49ers in recent years.
And I could argue, and I know Debo missed some time. Trent has missed some time. Hufanga's out for the year. But they've been relatively healthy in terms of historically for the Niners in recent memory. You know, they haven't suffered the catastrophic injury to one of their, you know, skilled players,
right?
Their key guys.
The bad ones were the Williams and McCaffrey.
Yeah.
When that ain't Greenlaw during that stretch when they, you know, unsurprisingly lost all those games.
Yeah. And so that's a factor. And so it may be who's the healthiest team, you know, that week going into each game in the preseason. I mean, to think, here we are 12 games in for the Niners, still five to go, still so much football,
a lot of football
to be played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's hope the 49ers keep playing like they did yesterday. And now what happens to your club with a big game against Dallas coming up?
I'm worried about this game. You know, we mentioned it, and you mentioned it, how the Eagles have been playing. Obviously a tough schedule, a bunch of games in a row as well. And now you have to go against one of the hottest teams in the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys, on their home field, division game. Dak's playing at an MVP level. You got the ground game with Pollard. You got the defense as well is playing much better now, even though Seattle, gashed them for a number of yards. But, you know, Micah Parsons is a playmaker out there. And so I worry about this game. You know, this is a tough stretch, man. When you think about, you know, Dallas, KC, Buffalo, Niners, and then Dallas again. 3-2, you know, I had them going into that. But if you lose this game, you open a door for the Niners. And so I said it before at the beginning of the season. The Eagles aren't competing against Dallas. I understand they're division rivals and everything like that. But really, you're competing against the Niners, and you got to get home field advantage. And so I think this is a massive game. They're battered. They're bruised. The Niners beat up on them. Jalen Hurts, you know, was taken into the tent for concussion to check him out for that. He came back in. I still don't understand why he was in the game.
I was just going to ask
with about
you,
2 minutes left.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, what are we doing here?
Do they think there's another quarter?
Right. I'm like, get this guy out of the game. But, no, man, I'm nervous and worried about this game, you know, because the Eagles have been skating by. They've been dodging a bullet, just barely getting by. And this could turn into a 2 or 3 game losing streak before they get right, sort of like we saw with the Niners. And, you know, it's not just one loss. It could turn into two or three.
Snowballing.
And that would be disastrous, I think.
I would think that's the biggest concern for the Eagles right now is, as we know, their record was it still is very good, but they haven't played great. And the hope and belief was, okay, at some point, you know, they're not playing great, but they're winning these games. And at some point, they start playing better, and then they're home free. But instead, and it's understandable because the schedule's been so tough, they're getting worn down. Yesterday, they started to go the other way a little bit, and that's alarming.
Yeah, that's alarming. It's, you know, and that run that we've seen them make late in games, it never came. You know, and that they look like a defeated team out there.
Yeah.
A team.
That place emptied out.
You know, trust me, man. I wanted to turn that thing off. I started sulking. I'm at my spot by myself watching that game, and I'm like, man, this is just awful.
You look good in that jersey, though. I mean, you should think about
I'm going to give it away tomorrow. Tomorrow, seriously, on our show, when we're back in studio, I'm going to give it away to somebody. We'll do some sort of contest. I don't need a Brock Purdy jersey. Trust me. Now, if it was Joe Montana.
We're the home of the Niners. We could probably get it signed before you give it away.
I don't need Brock Purdy's signature.
Well, I mean, just.
All right. Let's do that. I was about to say, I don't need it signed.
Uh-huh.
I don't need a Brock Purdy signature. Thanks, but no thanks.
He's pretty good, though, isn't he?
Nah, he's all right. You know what? He is pretty good. You look at the numbers. He is playing the quarterback position better than anybody in the National Football League right now. You okay with that? Is that okay?
It's just funny the way you say it. It's like, okay, there's something backhanded in there somewhere. I can't quite figure it out, but we'll figure that out. And when we come back, Roger Goodell made it official again. He wants to ban the brotherly shove, the tush push. Is there a better way to deal with this? That's next here with the Drive Guys from the Golden One Center on. You got the Drive Guys, Dwighty Gleason and the great Kyle Draper here coming to you from the Golden One Center. It's great to be back. I'm not going to bore you here with, you know, my vacation slides or anything, but was in Japan for a couple weeks, went to Kyoto for a couple days, and then Okinawa, where my wife is from. Had a very emotional reunion with her family there. It was great. Had a great time. But it's interesting, Kyle, because I studied Japanese a little bit in college. But, yeah. You know, it's one thing to sit there and go, watashi wa waiti desu. My name is Kevin. You know, that's one thing on a book. But then when people are talking, it's like, hold on.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
But some of that made a lot more sense than some of the excuses you've been trotting out today.
Listen to you, man.
for the thrashing that the Eagles endured yesterday. That said, and you're being a great sport, of course, wearing the pretty jersey. I guess Roger Goodell again came out and talked about how he wants to ban or outlaw the brotherly shove or the tush push. And I think we've talked about it before. Up until this point, I've been in favor of that. Like, yeah, let's get rid of it. But now, it's like the Eagles are the only team that does it, right, as much as they do. Somebody needs to stop it.
Right.
That's the thing. Let's not outlaw it. Let's see if somebody, because that's the
beauty of sports. For outlawing it? Like,
yeah.
You know,
it doesn't look good. It's not football. Well, someone needs to stop it. That's
right.
That's how you need to get rid of it.
It's sort of like, you know, in the NBA, the step back jumper, you know, it's like nobody's ever done it. Now James Harden is doing it. Is that legal? All right. And now everybody's doing it. Well, you know, the thing with the tush push or the brotherly shove, every other team can do it.
Right.
It's not like it's some competitive advantage where, you know, they're cheating the system or anything like that. You know, every other team. I will say, did you see they ran it with Marcus Mariota yesterday when he checked in?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as good. It was okay.
Interesting, yeah.
They got the first down, I think it was, but it wasn't as sharp. But I think we've seen other teams try it, and because they can't do it, maybe they're raising an issue with the league.
That's it.
Like, why does the commissioner feel like he needs to come in and, oh, we got to outlaw this play? It just doesn't make sense.
Someone has convinced him that it's not a good look. And again, like I said, I'm doing a 180 here because I was in favor of getting rid of it because there used to be a rule that you couldn't push anybody.
Yeah.
And then they changed the rule. So, yeah, there's no question.
Right.
It's totally legal. It is interesting to hear guys like Kelsey and some of the linemen talk about how difficult it is. You know, and so I think if anything, it's going to come to that. If somebody gets hurt doing that, they're going to have to back off of it. Fred Warner yesterday on the touchdown that the Eagles scored on the brotherly shove, he left his feet. And
yeah,
I realize,
yeah.
There's, what are you going to do? But once you leave your feet, brother, you got
no shot,
chance,
right?
What are you stopping it?
Exactly. Like, you have no leverage at all.
Yes.
Now, you know?
Yes.
And
yes.
So, you know, I think when you look at the tush push, brotherly shove, whatever you want to call it, it's fans whose teams can't do it, and when you go against the Eagles, you hate it. If you're an Eagles fan, you love it. And so I think teams just need to get better at that. You know, you can't pull a guy, but you can push a guy. I mean, and here's the thing. Is it just quarterbacks? What if Debo lines up in that spot?
Right.
You know, what if it's a running back? You hand it off and then push the guys. Is that legal? So are we going to outlaw the push totally?
Mm-hmm.
What's the go-to here?
I think you're right. I think the big complaint is, well, there's two, but I think the main one is other teams go, hey, we can't do it, so
right.
They shouldn't be able to. And then, well, why not? Well, because it doesn't look good. But I think it has become part of the character of your team. You know, it's like, hey, that's one of the things the Eagles do. No one knows how to stop it.
Right.
I don't see how that's bad, really.
And I could argue that from a viewer standpoint, it might even be good for football now because
in a
when
way,
it happens,
it's like, oh, here it comes.
Like,
hey,
here
you got to see this.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
It stands
so
out.
Now, and now you're waiting for somebody to actually stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that excitement, you know, like yesterday watching the game against the Niners. I'm like, uh-oh, is this the time that somebody stops it? And so it gives you something to get interested in addition to what's happening on the
Yeah. So, well, we'll see where it goes. But I've just done a 180 on it. And, you know, I'm not a big Eagles fan.
Right.
It's like,
nah,
that's just because you can't stop it. There's no reason to outlaw.
Right. And that's what's happening. That's what seems like it's happening. You know, other teams can't stop it.
And it's not like they win every game because they're doing that either.
Right.
It's like, no, there's more to it than
that.
Yeah,
there's more. It is an advantage, but it's not like they're cheating or anything like that. They're using the rules as presently constructed, which every team in the NFL can do. It's just that they're better than anybody else.
Do you think your team was outcoached yesterday? Do you
yes,
think
100%. Yeah? I thought that watching the game. I thought Kyle Shanahan outcoached Sirianni. I thought you know, and I'm not a football guy. I can't look and say, oh, here's the adjustment they made or whatever. But the way the Niners offense picked apart the Eagles defense, I mean, you know, whether it was, you know, Kittle blocking first and running out, like, I just thought the game plan was better. And Sirianni and that Eagles defense couldn't catch up to him yesterday.
Yeah, the 49ers clearly recognize that, all right, they're going to take away the run from us, so we're not even going to bother. You know, that was one of the issues they had when McCaffrey was out. 49ers couldn't run the ball, and so then they got behind, and then it changed everything. But it looked like they went in yesterday knowing that we're not even going to worry about that early on, and they still found ways around that. It was almost like Bill Walsh in the old West Coast offense, which was five-yard handoff, they used to call it. Short passes will take the place of our running game.
Yeah, and you know – and then you get the lead, and then you turn it over to CMC.
And the defense, for all the talk of Wilkes, what a terrible job he's doing, their defense is playing great right now.
Their defense was great. I thought, you know, it was the bend, don't break kind of defense in that first quarter. But after that, they pretty much shut the Eagles down. I mean, you know, they had the one touchdown in the third quarter and one in the fourth, and Jalen Hurts still threw for close to 300 yards. But the line of scrimmage and the takeaway that running game, the Eagles are a good running team. Swift is a good running back. He's been having some great games, and he was a non-factor. Once I saw that happening, it's like if you can't run the ball, and the Eagles couldn't yesterday, it's going to be hard scoring, and we saw that. 19 points, man, against this Niners offense too, you know, you need 24 or 31, something like that. Or you need your defense to be a Cleveland or somebody like that we saw earlier, and the Eagles just aren't there right now.
You see the Dolphins now, for what it's worth, right now, they're in the number one seed again in AFC.
Chiefs look suspect,
right? Yes.
Chiefs look like they got some issues. And this Dolphins team, when you look at it, you know, high flying, high scoring, you think, man, that's not sustainable. But maybe it is. Like, Tyreek Hill is the most unguardable player in the entire NFL.
I would like to see him win an MVP award. And we just talked to Jeffrey Chee, and he said that's not going to happen for him or McCaffrey because they're not quarterbacks, but he's unbelievable.
He is. And, you know it's coming, too. That's what's so amazing about him. We know how fast. I think what you see is you don't realize how fast he is until you have to go against him. You know, oh, I got an idea. You know, he's fast. And then you line up against him, and you're like, oh, snap. You know, look at this guy go. And so, no, he's amazing. He got great hands. You know, I've seen him in the red zone produce as well. It's not he's not just running go routes. You know what I mean? He's coming across the middle as well. You know, he has a chance for 2,000 receiving yards.
I remember talking before the season started, him saying, I want 2,000 yards. I was like, well, good luck. Yeah.
But they say he's like 500 or something away with five games left to go.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like a foregone conclusion, really. Like, I think it's going to happen.
Yeah. By the way, McCaffrey yesterday became the first 49er to rush for 1,000 yards since Frank Gore.
Really?
Remember, and you know, you have 17 games now.
Yeah.
But the teams just don't run the ball as much.
Right, right. No, you're right. And you know, he still has five games left to go, too, which is scary. You know, he's going to be, you know, a 16, 1,700-yard rusher. I think, you know, when you talk about MVP, and Brock Purdy's up there, no doubt, but what CMC does for this team out of the backfield, running the ball as well, he is a weapon. I mean, I watched him yesterday, and he just runs so hard. And there are several times where you thought the Eagles had him at the line of scrimmage or whatever, but he just keeps churning those legs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's tremendous, man. And he's a weapon. I mean, they're unstoppable, obviously, offensively with all their weapons. But, you know, maybe the greatest trade since when? We talked about this earlier this year. I mean, you talk about trades. Like, is this the best one since, like, Herschel Walker back in the day?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Seriously.
I do think the 49ers got a player who maybe even was better than they thought they were getting in this sense. Yesterday, Tim Ryan was talking about this on the radio broadcast. He said Christian McCaffrey, since he's been with the 49ers, he's better, but he's also tougher than he was with the Panthers. And he said he's even tougher than he was at Stanford. I think they got a player with a little more of an edge than they realized they were getting.
And you could see it with the way he runs.
Yeah,
like,
He's
not looking to avoid contact. He's looking to deliver contact when he runs.
And I think when they got him, he was thought of as, he's very skilled, but a little injury prone.
Like, he is I mean, he's delivering punishment when he runs. And so, no, he's been tremendous, man. 93 yards yesterday, had the touchdown on the ground. I mean, do they have any holes offensively? Even the run blocking has been good.
Supposedly, like, yeah, you know, the right side of the offensive
supposedly,
line.
Supposedly, but yeah. They've been playing
they
well.
They scheme around it.
Yeah.
When we come back to the Golden One Center, why the Kings will be doling out the punishment tonight with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Drive Guys, Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleason. Listen, an ovation. Should be a standing ovation, but I don't want to stand up. For Kyle Draper, because he is wearing, if you're watching on YouTube, as you well know, he is wearing the Brock Purdy jersey today. And I remember weeks ago we said, hey, well, you know, whoever, depending on who wins that game on the third, someone's going to have to wear the jersey of the other team. And I thought, well, I don't know if we ever actually finalized it. So I didn't know you'd be wearing it today, and I applaud you.
No, man.
You did that on your own.
I did it on my own, and I paid my hard-earned cash for it.
Woo.
You know, that's the hard part to swallow. You know, it's like, all right, I'm wearing a Purdy jersey. It's red, but I actually bought one. Like, you know, I didn't just borrow it from a fan.
$50?
Come on, man.
$780?
Come on, man. Come on.
<That's>
Way
nice.
Too much. Way too much.
Oh, okay.
Way too much.
That's a nice one.
It was 100 plus, that's for sure. And
yeah.
So, no, it is a nice jersey, and if I wasn't an Eagles fan, I might actually keep it. But, you know, eventually I'm going to give this thing away, man. Maybe tomorrow, or like you said, we find a way to get it signed and give it away, do something like that, charity, something.
That would
we'll
be
figure
nice.
Something.
That would be great.
Yeah.
By the way, I know you posted on Twitter video of you outside the arena before you came in.
Yes.
Talking to setting up the show today, and someone pointed out on Twitter, or X, pardon me, that you were wearing a Gonzaga.
Yes.
Like a warm-up, which is, I have nothing against Gonzaga, I'm just curious what the connection is there.
So my wife is from Spokane.
Okay.
And I've always been a Zags fan. You know, I was talking to Monty McNair. I saw him outside there here at Doco, and I was like, you know, I go back to the days of Blake Stepp and, you know, way back. You know, like the late 90s, early 2000s
sure.
with Gonzaga. And then my wife's from Gonzaga. Got to see a game at the Kennel out there, so always been a fan of that program.
Great.
And so got that swag. It's underneath here. Got that swag from Gonzaga. So, yeah, big Gonzaga fan.
I when I was coaching, like, 8th grade girls basketball, junior high, middle school level basketball, there's a girl on our team named Amanda Brown who was a great, really just loved basketball. She made the Gonzaga women's team as a walk-on.
A walk-on?
From Sacramento.
Okay.
Now she's a coach at Pacific.
Oh, that's pretty huge.
Made the
nice.
Zags as a walk-on.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, walk-ons. I tried out Temple University when I went there with John Chaney. I tried to walk on. He didn't take walk-on, so I didn't make it. Nobody made it, you know, so that's impressive.
Yeah.
For her to be able to do that.
That's because of that pass you threw Rashid.
Rashid Wallace.
Thought it
that
was a shot.
Yeah. That's still my greatest pass ever. Man. And for Sheed to say it was a shot, yeah, that cuts deep. That cuts deep.
I think, I don't know what you think, I think the Kings win tonight. I just think it's a great matchup in terms of the Pelicans, this will be their third game in four nights. The Kings are playing so well right now. I think there's a really good matchup at home. There's going to be a lot of juice in the building. We got T-shirts out here. It's interesting. People on X, you know, excited about the T-shirts, although every so often someone says, oh, yeah, I prefer the purple. But the atmosphere is going to be great, and the Kings this year, I think for the most part, correct me if I'm wrong, but they've played well when the atmosphere has been special in the building.
Yeah, it's going to be electric here, and, you know, maybe not a Game 7 playoff game kind of thing, but, you know, you add in the fact we owe the Pelicans something.
Yep.
You got something to play for. Trip to Vegas on the line. You know, your squad is playing well now, 11-7. And, you know, it's going to be pumped up, a blue out, I guess we'll call this, out here at the arena. You know, no Chris Duarte, however, today. So it'll be interesting to see who's that first or second guard off the bench, you know. Do you turn to Keon Ellis a little earlier? Obviously, Malik Monk's going to get some time. Do you come with Sasha and go with a bigger lineup there with him at the three? And so it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited, man. A Monday night, a December 4th game. Shout out to Jay-Z, too, his birthday today, the great rapper Jay-Z. But a December 4th game with meaning, man, with electricity, I'm all for it.
Sasha, just compared to what he was in the first few games of the season, it's just a half beat slower, right? He was rushing everything, and now you can tell he's not just trying to get rid of it before he even catches it.
Yeah.
And you can tell
it was
so
like a
much
hot
smoother.
Potato at first, right?
Yeah.
He would get it and then fire it out, you know. It's so much smoother, and you were on the road, you know, you were out there in Japan, but we've seen some development from him, not only as a shooter, but, you know, that Warriors game taking it to the basket.
Uh-huh.
He had a couple blocks in that game as
His first few games, he did not put the ball on the floor
at all. Exactly. And so you're seeing him being more comfortable. We had a discussion last week, and Sasha admitted he's never going to be a lockdown defender or anything like that. And he admitted also those DMP CDs, did not play coach's decisions, really bothered him. But he's fighting his way through it, and he's been tremendous, I think. I'm looking for big things from him tonight. They're going to need him tonight, I think.
Now, I got to ask you, I was watching the Warrior game here, the Warrior and the King game. Kings win, knocking the Warriors out and advancing. And I'm in a mall in Okinawa, and I'm watching on my phone, watching that game. I don't even know what store we were in. But the Malik Monk shot, which they won the game, great shot. Yeah. He had to have a lot of courage just to take that shot. But what was that shot?
Dude, that was Malik magic, what we saw right there. And, you know, and I'm sitting here and I'm watching the game. And, you know, it was a weird game, though, Whitey, because, you know, the Warriors had to win by 12 or more.
Right, yeah.
So once I knew that wasn't going to happen and the Kings were going to advance, I sort of let my guard down a little bit. I sort of relaxed a little bit. And then all of a sudden, I look up and I'm like, oh, snap, they can actually win this game. And then Malik makes that shot. And I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of the most improbable comeback wins because I think everybody was focused on the 11, 12 points. And then you look at it, and they can actually win. And Malik hits that shot, man. It was pandemonium.
Like a lean back.
Yeah, lean.
Straight
like,
on, bang.
Yeah,
it just, well, I got to get something up there. That was amazing.
Yeah, that was amazing. And he's been on a tear as of late, 26 last game the other night against Denver. And so, you know, he's in the front running, I think, for sixth man of the year. You got Tim Hardaway Jr. out there in Dallas, who's averaging 16.8 points per game, I think it is. But he's taking three more shots than Malik Monk. And I think what Malik Monk gives this team, man, oh, my God. He is, you know, the Vinny Johnson, the Manu Ginobili.
Ooh,
man. Yeah. He's that kind of sixth man for this Kings team.
Speaking of shots, John Hollinger is still taking shots at your Kings. We're back with that from the Golden One Center when the Drive Guys return on Sacktown Sports.